21. Kanawha turned and came face to face with horror. Black, carapaced creatures the size of small dogs were emerging from the sides of hollow vines. The insects, if that's what they were, made a chittering noise by clacking together a pair of curving pincers that jutted out from diamond-shaped heads. Feelers waved frantically where eyes should have been as they scurried forward on 8 spindly legs covered with coarse black hair. There was a tremendous bellow, and Kanawha jumped to the side as panicked Murifants thundered past, their trunks held high in the air. The black insects leaped at the animals as they stampeded, but the 4 Brindos ran alongside, headbutting and trampling the 8-legged horrors at every turn.
"To arms!" Kanawha shouted, drawing his saber from its scabbard.
"Ferrogs!"
Vecina screamed, running to stand beside him. She saw the incomprehension on his face and shouted again.
"Dog spiders! They haven't been seen in these parts in years! This makes no sense!"
"Like rocks," he thought to himself, taking a step forward to keep her behind him. He felt naked without his musket, furious that he'd left it with his saddle and other baggage.
"They'll try to drag people back into their vines. We have to stop them," Vecina yelled, her thin stiletto flashing in her hand.
"Stay here," Kanawha said, starting forward to attack the nearest ferrogs as more boiled out of the vines.
"Major, your orders?"
Kanawha spotted Lorien 20 yards away, already directing a group of soldiers. "The men. I'm an officer again," Kanawha chided himself, responsible for the lives of hundreds, not just his own. He took another step forward, then forced himself to stop.
"Don't bother loading. Fix bayonets. A and B companies fall back to the road. Don't leave anyone behind. C company, on me," he cried,
slowly walking back toward the wagons as the ferrogs scrambled closer.
"No,"
Vecina screamed, grabbing him by the arm.
"They need to stay by the fires. You need light."
"I can see well enough," Kanawha said, shrugging loose from her grasp.
"But they can't. They're not elves. They're men."
Kanawha realized his mistake too late.
"Damn it."
He tried shouting again for the men to go back toward the campfires, but the chittering noise had risen to such a high pitch that he couldn't make himself heard. Suddenly a ferrog lunged at Kanawha's leg, and he cut down with the saber, severing the monster in two. His arm tingled. The ferrog's body was like wood. Something surged inside him, a feeling of cold power, but there was no time to puzzle it out. Another came at him from the left, and he pivoted, stabbing it between its pincers. This time the blade slid in easily. A gush of oily black fluid spurted from the dying creature's mouth as he withdrew the saber. Frost appeared to briefly glitter along the blade. He became aware of the noise and chaos beyond him and looked up. Soldiers thrashed madly, stabbing with bayonets and smashing at their attackers with the butts of their muskets. Screams and yells punctuated the horrible chittering noise. Here and there a bright flash was seen, followed by the sharp crack of a musket firing, indicating some of the men had been able to load and fire. There was a roar and a whoosh, and 2 fiery trails arced across the black to detonate a second later, sending parts of ferrogs flying high into the air. But for every shot, there were 100 chittering shrieks. The odds were not in their favor.
"Vecina! Tell the Murifant drivers to take burning brands from the fire and move forward to give the soldiers light. Vecina!"
He whirled around, but he couldn't see her anymore. He started to run toward the fire, and several ferrogs pounced on him at once, their combined weight knocking him to the ground. Instead of bracing for the fall, Kanawha curled and rolled as he hit, shaking the creatures from his back and jumping back onto his feet before they could attack again. He swung his saber in a smooth arc and felt it slice through their thick flesh 3 times. Jolts of lightning raced through his arm and shoulder, but he managed to hold on to his saber. Kanawha stumbled backward as another ferrog bore down on him. A soldier stepped in front of him and cleaved it in 2. 4 more were quickly dispatched, and the bugs skittered into the dark, looking for easier prey.
"Thanks,"
Kanawha said, reaching out his free hand to clasp the shoulder of his savior.
"If you are to die, it will be by my hand and no other," Critton replied, glaring at Kanawha before moving off into the night.
There was no time to debate the matter, as a new cry caught Kanawha's attention.
"The prince! Rally to the prince!"
A seething mass of the creatures was crawling over the prince's marquee, pulling it down by sheer weight of numbers. Their pincers cut through the cloth with ease, allowing still more of the monsters to pour through the gaps like water into a sinking ship. A group of soldiers, led by the Drukhar-wielding dwarf, Private Arkorn, were hacking and stabbing their way toward the marquee even as screams came from inside. "They aren't going to make it in time," Conwy realized, unsure if that troubled him or not. He took a tentative step toward the tent, and was immediately set on by several more Ferrogs, ending any thoughts he had of rendering aid to the prince. Conwy had time for one more glance just as the tent collapsed completely, with the soldiers still several yards away, before the pincers of the Ferrogs close at hand drew his attention back. Conwy swung his saber back and forth to keep a circle of clear ground around him as he edged backward toward the fire. It suddenly dawned on him that he'd misheard the warning. It wasn't "rally to the prince," it had been "rally and the prince." She was still in there. Elwyn clenched his musket in both hands like a club and swung it wildly. He missed the Ferrog he was aiming for and knocked Yimt's shako off the dwarf's head.
"Watch where you're swinging that bloody thing!"
Yimt shouted, managing to duck out of the way just in time as Elwyn took aim at another creature. The two of them were pressed back to back, fending off the dog spiders.
"There are too many of them!"
Elwyn cried, swinging his musket again. It connected, and he felt the satisfying crunch of a Ferrog's head being caved in, but in the next instant three more latched onto his musket and tore it from his hands. Another jumped at his face, and Elwyn threw up his arms as a last defense. He suddenly found himself lifted off his feet. Elwyn lowered his arm to see Yimt had picked him up with one hand while wielding his Drukhar with the other. Elwyn tried and failed to follow the course of the dwarf's blade as it slashed through the Ferrogs. Wind whistled past Elwyn's ears as Yimt swung his Drukhar. The black blade was a whistling blur of death. Ferrogs lunged and skittered all around them, looking for an opening, but whenever one leaped, Yimt's Drukhar met it head-on. A red, pulpy mist soon surrounded them, and Alwyn's specks were completely covered in blood.
"Yimt, put me down and I can help!"
Alwyn shouted, not really sure how true that was. The dwarf kept swinging his Drukhar.
"Nah, you're doing fine as my shield."
"What?"
"Just teasing. But you are getting a bit heavy,"
Yimt said as he set Alwyn back on the ground.
"Find a weapon and watch me back!"
Elwyn ran a quick hand across his specs and picked up the first musket he could find. It was slimy with Ferrog guts, and the stock was shattered, but it was better than nothing. He risked a quick look at Yimt and was horrified at what he saw. Yimt held his Drukhar in his right hand and a bayonet in his left. Both were slick with blood. But it was Yimt's face that startled Elwyn. He'd expected to see the little mad one in all his fury, but instead the dwarf looked as calm as a still pond. Elwyn realized then that Yimt wasn't just a soldier. He was a professional killer, and he was in his element. Unfortunately, so were the Ferrogs. Conwy looked back to the tent, but could no longer tell where it was. Soldiers milled about everywhere, and the dwarf, if he still lived, was nowhere in sight. A Ferrog scrambled into the cleared circle, and Conwy impaled it with a two-handed stab, pinning it and his saber to the ground. When he tried to remove the blade, he found it was stuck. The dog spiders seemed to sense his problem and started creeping toward him. Conwy looked around frantically for something to fend them off with. In complete desperation, he grabbed hold of one of the pincers from the dead Ferrog and ripped it free to use as a weapon. Black slime oozed from the torn end, covering Conwy's hands and making it difficult to keep a good grip. The Ferrogs continued to close, their feelers waving madly, as if to say, "We have you now." Conwy was preparing to charge straight at them, when a sensation of cold needles stabbing his chest brought him to his knees. He opened his mouth to scream, but nothing, not a sound, not even a breath, passed his lips. "Am I dead?" he wondered, watching the Ferrogs move ever closer. A Ferrog scrabbled forward on its eight spindly legs to mere inches in front of him. Its pincers opened and closed, and then it squatted, preparing to lunge straight for his throat. Conwy tried to lift his hand, but his body would not respond. Other Ferrogs were moving in, getting ready to swarm. The acorn from her wolf oak pressing against his chest, beat like his own heart. The Farrog jumped. It all happened in an instant. The Farrog leaped into the air and was skewered on the point of a sword. It squirmed frantically as a black frost spread over it. A moment later it burst into black flame and was utterly consumed. Conover shook his head, not sure what he was seeing. The other Farrogs scattered as a group of soldiers suddenly loomed from the darkness, hacking their way through the creatures with a cold precision that Conover could never hope to emulate. In a rush of sound and heat, the world came back to Conover, and his senses were once again assaulted by the battle around him. The soldiers had formed a protective ring around Conover with their backs to him, their swords rising and falling with grim determination. He was unable to see any of their faces, their bodies always cloaked in shadow no matter which way they turned. Conover clutched at his chest as he gulped in air and tried to stand. A whistling noise made him look up. A silver light was arcing across the night sky. When it reached its apex, it stopped, and then burst with a ferocious concussion. His ears buzzed with pain, and his sight went completely white even as he closed his eyes. When he opened them again, it looked like broad daylight. Scattered groups of soldiers cheered, their muskets rising and falling like scythemen walking through a field of grain. The Farrogs, so terrifying in the dark, now appeared smaller, more vulnerable. The light confused them, and they started to flee toward the vines. The soldiers who had saved him were gone. A presence approached Kanawha from behind. He grabbed for his blade and wrenched it free, then spun around to defend himself. A cold, burning sensation stung his hands, and when he risked a look down he saw that they were clean, the blood of the Farrog completely gone, a few crystals of frost winking along the hilt of the saber before they too vanished.
"They only hunt at night. We will be safe now," Vecina said.
Her clothes were torn, and she had a thin red cut along one cheek, but otherwise she appeared unhurt.
"You did that?"
Conawha asked, pointing up at the sky with his saber.
"It's little more than a conjurer's trick,"
Vecina said, a look in her eyes saying otherwise.
"Can you burn the vines?" Conawha asked.
He was looking for signs of the dwarf and rally, but there was still too much chaos to make out anything clearly.
"Yes, but the Murifens are still out there, and a fire would only panic them further. Besides, the light will be enough for your men to defend themselves now. The Farrogs are fleeing."
"To hell with that," Conover rasped, rounding on her and bringing his face inches from hers. "If you have the power to destroy these things, then do it."
Vecina glared back at him and stood her ground.
"You would have me lay waste to this entire area, even though you are now protected?"
Conover opened his eyes in surprise.
"You're just like the elves of the Long Watch. They'd sit idly by and watch men freeze before they'd fell a tree to make a fire. This isn't a game, Vecina. Torch the vines. That's an order."
It was her turn to look surprised.
"I will not kill indiscriminately, and I most certainly am not a soldier for you to command. I have provided you light. Defend your men by it as you see fit, but I will not do more to aid in this slaughter."
Conawha clenched the pommel of his saber and gritted his teeth. Vecina's eyes glinted with the reflected light that still burned above them, and it was clear she wasn't going to listen to him. Without another word, Conawha spun on his heel and sprinted toward the prince's tent. Dead Farrogs lay everywhere, their black blood churned into the earth by the boots of the soldiers, the massive footpads of the Murifens creating a grotesque mud.
"Has anyone seen the colonel?"
Conawha shouted, fully expecting to find the prince in 100 pieces. A bent blade swung up in the air, dripping blood.
"He's over here, Major, and none the worse for wear, I'd wager," Private Arkorn said.
Conawha jogged the last few yards and stopped in amazement. The dwarf was covered in the black blood of the Farrogs, their bodies piled up around him to his waist. In fact, the dwarf was actually stuck, and using his drukhar to chop his way out of the entanglement.
"Get that man out of there," Conawha ordered.
Several soldiers began spearing the bodies on the end of their bayonets and heaving them away.
"Easy, lads, easy," the dwarf yelled, menacing them with his blade. "Not all the meat in here is bog."
Shouts to his left drew Conowa's attention, and he prepared for another attack, but relaxed as Jeer bounded into the light, the body of a Farrog clamped firmly between his teeth. The dog spider's legs were still twitching.
"There you are," Conowa said, reaching out to pat the Bengar on the head.
Jeer growled and dropped his muzzle toward the ground so that he could stare up at Conowa through the fur of his bushy eyebrows. Conowa slowly pulled his hand back and broke eye contact.
"And here I am over here, nowhere near your dinner."
Jeer sniffed once and quietly patted across the open ground toward the darkness, his eyes never straying from Conowa. All the while, the eight legs of the Farrog twitched and convulsed in Jeer's mouth. The soldiers gave him a wide berth.
"This is not at all how I expected the evening to turn out."
Conowa whirled around at the sound of the voice.
"You're alive."
"I am pleased to see you in a like state."
Raleigh stood among the tattered remains of the tent, her cloak as pristine as when she'd first entered it. Her hair, however, was even frizzier.
"And the prince?" Conowa asked. "Still in one piece?" he called out, hobbling out of the dark to stand in front of her. "No thanks to the guard detail for my tent."
He made an effort to stand up straight and brush at the many rents in his uniform.
"Secure this camp and put every man on watch. Then flog the soldier in charge of protecting me."
Conowa wanted to strike Prince Tyken right across the mouth.
"Sir, surely you don't blame the men for this."
He took a step forward. This fool couldn't really mean it.
"There was no way to know these creatures were going to attack."
Several soldiers gasped, and the prince's eyes grew wide. He took one step backward and placed his hands on his hips.
"Are you threatening me, Major?"
Conowa raised his hands in confusion, and only then realized he still held his saber in his hand. He reached down to grab a couple of vine leaves to clean the blade before sheathing it, but stopped when he saw the steel was perfectly clean.
"My apologies, Colonel. The heat of battle, you understand?"
"I am sure the prince understands," Raleigh started to say, but was cut off as the prince surged past her.
"I want a name, Major, and I want it right now."
"Sir, perhaps we could discuss this in private," Conowa said, motioning toward the soldiers grouped around. The dwarf had been set free and had come up to stand close by as if guarding Conowa's back. Surprisingly, it was a definite comfort.
"No need, Major. It's my fault,"
Lorien said, coming forward. He had lost his shako, and his hair was plastered to his skull, the sweat still dripping down his face. The steel tip of his 8-foot-long halberd glistened with black blood, and he leaned on it to catch his breath before straightening up and saluting the prince.
"Colonel, as acting regimental sergeant major, the responsibility was mine. If anyone is to be flogged, it should be me."
The prince smiled, a humorless one, no doubt refined in Her Majesty's court, maintaining pretense without any actual warmth behind it.
"A noble gesture, but no. I want the man responsible. Who was in charge of my guard detail?"
The muscles in Lorien's jaw trembled, and he looked at Conowa beseechingly.
"Tell me,"
Prince Tyken ordered. Lorien let out a small sigh.
"Corporal Critton, sir. The elf. He was assigned to guard your tent." "An elf!"
the prince spat out, fixing Conowa with a baleful stare.
"Very well. I want him broken to private and given 20 lashes at dawn. Is that clear? Major, you will see to it personally."
Conowa's protest died on his lips. Dozens of soldiers were now standing around them, the flickering light of burning brands shooting shadows back and forth across the blood-soaked earth. Musket fire still crackled, and the cries of wounded punctuated the night, and Conowa knew he had more important things to attend to.
"Yes, sir,"
Conowa said, saluting and leaving. He headed for the nearest fire, where a group of soldiers were tending to the wounded.
"The prince survived?"
Vecina asked, appearing suddenly in front of Conowa, halting him in his tracks.
"Thanks in large part to the dwarf. When a day or two has passed, I'm going to recommend him for a medal. The prince won't agree, of course, but it should make promoting Private Arkon to corporal significantly easier."
Vecina shook her head.
Surely you see the folly in this. This regiment is anathema to everything natural. I fear that the Ferrogs were but the first of many tribulations to come.
Wrapping ourselves in leaves and chewing grass won't change that, Kanawha said, moving to step past Vecina. She surprised him by reaching out a hand and grabbing his arm.
Get rid of it.
Kanawha was nonplussed.
Get rid of what?
Vecina gripped his arm harder.
You know what I'm talking about. I can feel it as if I held it in my hand. Your father was wrong to give it to you. It will not provide you with the help you need.
And I suppose you will? Like the way you burned the vines when I asked you? She let go of his arm.
And what then? Would you have me burn every piece of land that holds shadows? This regiment is no different from the empire that spawned it. Wherever it goes, it will leave a scar.
Better the land than us, Kanawha said. Vecina shook her head.
Do you not see? You are already wounded, she said,
pointing not to his ear, but to the place where the pouch lay under his jacket.
You risk everything for nothing. When we were in the forest, I sensed that you were starting to connect with the power around you. Don't give up now.
Kanawha felt his face flush.
Stay out of my mind, Vecina. You don't know anything about it.
Then help me to understand, and let me help you.
And what? Go back to the forest and live among the bloody trees? Kanawha asked. Have you ever met an elf of the Long Watch? They live in a world that has little to do with the one the rest of us inhabit. They will sit for days in a field of grass just to listen to the wind play among the blades and think nothing of food. I've seen them weep like babies when a tree is struck by lightning, yet when a wagon full of human homesteaders foundered and drowned in a fast-flowing river, their only concern was that the wood of the wagon was pierced with iron nails.
And what would these humans have done except cut the trees to clear the land for farming, built roads, and dug up the earth in search of metal?
Her face was taut with an inner struggle, as if every fiber of her being was restraining the desire to call a bolt of lightning down on him.
If the elves of the Long Watch don't care for this world, who will? Your precious empire that brings civilization at the point of a bayonet? Your master's way is the way of fire and violence. Burn it if it won't change to meet your needs. Slash it down if it won't bow to your will. Great rifts are being carved in the natural order of the world. Do you think that can go on forever without consequence?
Kanawha wasn't sure what he would have said next as a soldier came running up and interrupted them.
"Begging the Major's pardon, but we've got a man in a bad way. We need the witch, sir."
He was breathing heavily, his eyes still wide with the exertion of fighting just a few moments ago.
"Take me to him,"
Vecina said, turning her back on Kanawha and moving off into the night. The soldier looked from her to Kanawha.
"Show her!"
Kanawha barked, following them as the soldier tore off through the shattered camp. Ferrogs lay dead everywhere he looked. He saw bits of uniforms, broken muskets, and overturned cookpots interspersed among the carnage, and tried to picture what the camp had looked like just a short time ago.
"Make a hole! The Major and his witch coming through!"
A group of soldiers parted, revealing a man lying flat on his back, his right arm draped over his stomach. Kanawha kneeled on one side, and Vecina on the other.
"Evening, Major."
"I remember you," Kanawha said, looking into the man's one good eye. Blood covered the soldier's face, and a rattling sound emanated from his chest.
"Yes, yes, sir. Merry. Hell of a night, sir, if you'll pardon my swearing. I did my best, Major. I didn't let you down."
Merry was suddenly racked with coughing, and blood trickled out of the corner of his mouth. His right arm slid off his body, and Kanawha gently grabbed him by the hand, placing it back over the gaping wound in his stomach. Merry's skin already felt cold.
"I know you did. You just rest, Merry. Save your strength," Kanawha said, looking over at Vecina. "Mr. Coy here will fix you right up."
"Best news I've heard all day,"
Merry managed before another coughing fit. Kanawha leaned over him and whispered to Vecina, "Can you help him?" Vecina shook her head.
But you healed me. Surely there is something you can do, he asked.
In battle he could always fight harder, but now, in its aftermath, he felt helpless. He had no weapon, no skill to combat this. Soldiers were dying again, and there was nothing he could do. Vecina rose from beside Mary and walked several yards away, motioning for Kanawha to follow her. When they were out of earshot of the soldiers around the dying man, she whispered to him,
"Do you know nothing of the arts? In healing you, I tapped your own strength and that of the land around us."
She looked over at Mary, and her face softened.
"He hasn't the strength to begin to repair the wound. And this land," she said, kicking her boot in the dust, "has little to offer. Surely you feel it. The natural order is poisoned here. Something is changing the land. Ferrogs have not been seen in years, and even then they were never that big. All I can do is ease his suffering."
A cold, stabbing pain flared in Kanawha's chest, and he reached reflexively for it, his hand closing around the shape of the acorn. He took his hand away and looked at Vecina.
"No!"
Vecina shouted, causing several soldiers to look over at them. She lowered her voice as she continued.
"Would you pour water on a drowning man? Can you not feel what it is?
My father wouldn't have given this to me if it was that dangerous. Surely you can use it somehow to help Mary?" he asked, pulling the pouch out of his jacket and holding it out to her. "I'm not asking you to destroy anything this time, but to help."
She stared at the small leather pouch in his hand for a long time, then looked back at him with regret and something close to fear in her eyes.
"I cannot do this."
"You don't need to," Lorien said from behind, startling both of them. "He's dead."